here on ESPN Plus alongside Mauricio Pedrosa. I am Sebi Salazar. Mau, great to be with you on a rare Football Americas Friday night. How are you doing?
I would call it Football Águilas del Americas edition of the show. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the first time that we're doing the show together, just me and you? Is it
correct?
Is this a it's first? Also the,
it is, and it's also the first time we broke out the Football Americas note cards. What a moment! Look at that.
Hey, if this show goes right without Herc, you never know what might happen in the future. You never know. I'm just saying.
We're not missing. We're just saying.
We miss him, but we're just saying, right?
Mm-hmm. Mau, do you know where he is, actually? He is in Miami. Now, I cannot confirm that he's there getting things ready for Lionel Messi's arrival, but he is in Miami, Mau, so at least know Hercules Gomez whereabouts. We will talk about Messi and the potential arrival at Inter Miami a little bit later in the show. We will also hear from Hercules Gomez as well, because earlier in the week, Herc and I actually sat down for an interview with Clint Dempsey. We'll hear part one of that two-part interview today. Also in this show, Mau, we're going to hear from Paxton Aaronson. Mm. He's going to play in the German Cup final tomorrow right here on ESPN+. So lots to get to, but let's start with the CONCACAF Champions League final. First leg, León against LAFC. MLS versus Liga MX. First leg, down in Mexico. And what a game and an atmosphere we had. 7 minutes in, and this is going to be a theme throughout this highlight. John McCarthy of LAFC making a big save.
Yeah, but León playing really well off the bat. A team that hadn't had a competitive match in 24 days didn't look like they were out of rhythm or out of sync.
Corner kick, León, 8th minute. William Tecillo, 1-0.
Set piece is so important. Poor defending by LAFC. Who said Liga MX didn't play with tactical genius? Well, there you go. It's 1-0.
It was Timothy Tillman there getting dunked on. 1-0 into the second half. And Angel Mena going to come close there. We got a VAR replay, and Ryan Hollingshead guilty of a handball. Mau, did they get it right?
I think they did. You cannot raise your hands like that and expect not to be called in a pen. Good job by VAR.
Angel Mena, as he often does, steps up and slams that one home. And León were up 2-0 just before the half. Deep into the second half, León looking for a third. And they thought they'd had it here. Crashing header at the back post. Osvaldo Rodriguez, but wait. VAR says no goal.
And VAR is right again. Look at León's players just crushing into LAFC's defender back. That's a foul. Good job by the referee again.
Major turning point in the game. And then another one, Mau, just a few minutes later. In fact, just about the last kick of the game, León wanted a foul there. Instead, it goes all the way down to the other end. And Danny Boanga, 2-1.
First of all, unbelievable. León had to be up, way up in the score. And this is not a foul. Maldonado plays the ball first. The other contact is incidental. Again, good call by the refs.
Está saliendo el LAFC, buddy. Steve Gerondolo fired up. León, in the end, they do win by a final score of 2-1. Just how late was that Boanga goal? It was historically late. Yes, the last kick of the game there. As LAFC gave a very valuable goal in the first leg. Let's hear from both coaches post-game.
Yeah, it's a bit of a lifeline. We're obviously very disappointed in our performance tonight. That goal does give us a chance, but that goal alone does not help us win a final. The performances of every individual out there, the performance of the group as a group, it needs to be much, much improved. I think the scoreline is extremely lucky for us, but we are experienced enough, smart enough to bounce back. We are also fit enough to put in a much better performance on Sunday. And this team knows exactly what's at stake. And so I am 100% positive LAFC performance on Sunday will be much improved and hopefully good enough to raise a trophy.
Las sensaciones son un poco teñidas por lo que fue esa última acción y cómo se origina y todo lo que fueron esos últimos minutos con algunos fallos que indudablemente creo que fueron claramente desacertados y que lamentablemente tuvieron un impacto muy grande en el resultado final. Pero sacando esos últimos minutos y sobre todo esos fallos que determinaron lo que determinaron, me quedo con muy buenas sensaciones de lo que somos capaces de hacer el domingo.
Okay, Mal. Sounds like Nicolás Larcamón is saying the refs were at least a decisive, if not the deciding factor in leg one. You agree?
No, he's wrong. The decisive factor was the inability by León to score and be clinical inside the box and just have finishing the many opportunities that they had to have a different scoreline traveling now to Los Angeles. That was the deciding factor, not being clinical inside the penalty area. On the other hand, we can have the conversation regarding the referees. Again, as I said during the highlight, I think the referees were right the way they decided those controversial plays. And the biggest part of it is they are controversial. They're not crystal clear. So if they're not crystal clear errors or mistakes by the referees, you cannot blame them. You should blame yourself, Nicolás Larcamón. You should blame Ángel Mena. You should blame yourself. Because when León was playing at the highest of levels, he made two substitutions that hindered the ability of his team of keeping on creating good chances. Yes, León outperformed, outplayed, outcoached LAFC. That's why the disappointment, not because the referees did a poor job.
This feels very similar, Mao, to the first leg of the semifinal, LAFC and Philadelphia Union. The Union in that first leg probably felt like they didn't do enough, like they didn't take advantage of an LAFC team that, for as good as they are and as good as we know them to be, are not really in CONCACAF Champions League, at least in these first legs, Mao, playing all that well. 7 shots on goal for León. You mentioned it in that first half. It was chance after chance after chance. Full credit to John McCarthy. He stood on his head. But as you're watching that first half, I don't think anybody, certainly anybody who is a León fan, wasn't thinking, we're blowing this right now. This could be 2-3-4-0. And the difference, Mao, between 3-0 and 2-1 is obviously massive.
Massive.
But if we're even honest about what this score would have been, let's say LAFC doesn't get that goal at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Even if this just finishes 2-0, León should still have been disappointed because this really should have been more. They could have, Mao, ended this in the first leg. Instead, now, it looks very bleak for them in the return leg.
Yeah, the 2-0 already fell short. That's true. And it is all about the goals, right? It is all about that final score. But it's also about how you feel flying and going back to LA, because I can assure you that probably one of the goals for LAFC was just to survive the first leg, just as they did against Philadelphia. You just need to survive the first leg, especially when you're hosting the second leg. And hey, there's a reason why we play one game in León, one game in Los Angeles. You have to be able to understand that this is not a 90-minute affair. This is a 180, maybe more, minute affair. Once you understand that, you're going to be in better position to play and be better and raise the trophy. Now, clearly, LAFC will have to perform way better than they did at León. But for now, this is a very good result considering the performance, the circumstances, and the fact that nobody thought you would be able to survive the way both teams actually performed on the field.
Now, the odds makers have LAFC installed as heavy favorites, not just for the second leg, but to win the CONCACAF Champions League, despite the fact that they are trailing by a goal on aggregate. Do you agree LAFC heavy favorites to win it all now going back to Los Angeles in that second leg?
I checked with the expert, my good friend Don Vegas, and he agrees. He agrees. Well, you know this, LAFC, they are a very, very different team when they play at home. And you mentioned the atmosphere at Estadio León. I was disappointed. I was disappointed that it was not a full house, not a full stadium. That's inexcusable for León. That's not going to happen at BMO. The ticket sold out in 10 minutes. The atmosphere is going to be like something we haven't seen in this country. We saw it in Philadelphia and in Seattle last year. But you know BMO is special. And I think the crowd is going to play a big factor. And you know this well. LAFC can do perform very differently when they play away than with, how they play when they're at home. So, yeah, I also consider LAFC to be heavy favorites to win the title, for sure. You don't?
The history, Mal,
you don't
suggests
agree
something quite different. The history suggests something quite different. I think everybody's saying, oh, LAFC got that last goal, and it feels like a massive goal, and I'm not saying that it's not, and that their job is done. Now they're going to go home to Los Angeles and just roll Leon. Only once since 2000, since basically the modern era of CONCACAF Champions League, CONCACAF Champions Cup, when they went to two legs, has a team lost the first leg and come back to win the CCL. That was 2010. It was Pachuca against Cruz Azul. That's not a lot of history that says LAFC is just going to go home and walk this thing. And now I think there should be more concerns. I am shocked that they're as big a favorite as they are based on how they played, not just against Leon, but against Philadelphia as well. We are not seeing the best of LAFC. And I think to win the continental title, you are going to have to bring your best. You seem very confident they're just going to flip the switch.
I am very confident because when they have to flip the switch, they have done it. Crunch time. LAFC has proven time and time again that they are able to deliver. Now, do I need to see more from Carlos Vela? Of course I need to see more from Carlos Vela. Do I need to see more from Buanga? Yeah, of course. He had some chances in the first half. He was not physically, the whole team felt a little slow. I don't know if you agree with that. I don't know if the stage was too big. The lights shine way too bright for them. I don't know what it was, but it was just not the same LAFC. But what we have seen from this team is when they have to deliver, they have been able to do it. And remember, Seb, you go back to history. I get it. I'm also going to go back to history. The last time these two teams actually played knockout stage 2020, Leon had a very similar performance at home. They actually had a bigger lead. And when they came and played in Los Angeles, you know what happened? It was just one team on the former bank, and that was LAFC. So, hey, if you're going to play the history card, I'm going to do it as well and tell you that this team has done it before against their very own rivals on Sunday.
All right, you've heard from Mal, you've heard from me, you've heard from the odds makers. What about the SPI? What is the SPI?
Oh! That actually gives me even more confidence, with all due respect to my pals.
There you go. Mal, always anti-computer. Leon, a 58% to win the CONCACAF Champions League,
more
according
about the feeling,
to 538.
You know that.
SPI, that's right. The cold computers, they never know what's going on.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
What about what's going on with the U.S. men's national team? They're up in their CONCACAF Nations League roster on Thursday. B.J. Callahan, strategy analyst turned assistant coach, turned interim manager, calling up 24 players. Now, he can only take 23, so the official final list due Monday. Going to have to cut somebody. Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Bolarin Balogun are your headliners. No Tyler Adams, he's injured. So are Zach Steffen, Ethan Horvath, Cameron Carter-Vickers, Tim Ream, Josh Sargent, Daryl, DK, and Malik Tillman. Let's hear from the new coach of this team, BJ Callahan.
How did we come about the roster? Anthony and I, we work daily, day to day. I mean, we would spend more time than we would spend with, you know, our significant, my significant other, or, you know, any of our friends. So, no, he didn't just hand me a list. We worked diligently through this, building it together, having communication with clubs, having communication with players. So it was just an easy transition into sort of dotting I's and crossing T's and making these, you know, making it final by the time that we release it. But we were well down that process prior to that phone call that I got. When you talk about, is there turmoil in the group? The best thing I can describe is when I called the players, we are always, there's always an element of surprise from the phone call that Anthony steps down. And I can assure you that there was zero panic in the group. In terms of communicating with Greg, I can tell you that Greg is somebody that I hold in high regard. We were obviously coaching colleagues, but we're also friends. So we talk a lot. He's somebody that I bounce ideas off of, but in no way or would he ever step over the line of like telling people to, you know, who to pick or anything like that. He's a man of too much integrity to ever do that. But for me, he's served as a friend, as a mentor, as a colleague, and someone that I hold in really, really high regard.
All right, that's BJ Callaghan. Seb, your first impressions of this 24-man roster for that crucial game against Mexico in the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal?
It's a pretty good roster, Mal. It's a pretty good roster. I'm impressed. I don't know if with the depth, but the potential depth, because a lot of these guys are not proven yet, right? There's a lot of talent, a lot of potential, but they don't have a lot of caps. That said, it's a really good team. I rattled off the 8 injured guys. We forgot Kellen Acosta as well. I mean, that's a lot of injured guys. And you look at this team, there's still a lot of quality. 13 players from the World Cup, and most importantly, 8 guys that started all 4 games. So the significant core of your World Cup team is going to be back. Now, the obvious big issue, the black cloud, is no Tyler Adams. Yeah. That's going to make you more vulnerable, and that's going to be compounded by no Cameron Carter-Vickers and no Tim Ream. So you're going to be more vulnerable than you probably were at the World Cup. But you are also, because you've now got Folarin Balogun, going to be more lethal, going to be more clinical. And in tournament football, I think that matters just as much. So I think this is a really, really good team for the U.S. It's a really young team, 25 years. I think 24 and change is the average age. And you've got 11 players now that didn't play in the World Cup. This team had a pretty good World Cup and was pretty young. They didn't need a lot of turnover. Yeah. They're still showing the depth here. This is a really good team for the U.S., I think.
It is a very balanced roster. That's what I like about it. When you mention all the players that are absent due to injuries and the fact that you can come up with a 24-player roster that looks like this, that has all that previous experience that you just mentioned and explained, looking at it from the Mexican national team point of view, I'm concerned. And we'll talk about Mexico in a few minutes. But when I look at this U.S. roster, I go like, they are in way better shape. Mm-hmm. And I understand the manager situation is important, and that's gonna get handled in the upcoming weeks. But as it turns out, the players and the roster, it is in a very good shape. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I think you can see the differences in the approaches, too, between Mexico and the U.S. It seems like everything we're hearing right now, Mao, is that the U.S. is going to go all in on the CONCACAF Nations League. There may be some carryover from Nations League to Gold Cup, but not nearly as much as we're expecting for Mexico. Mexico seems to view these competitions evenly. U.S. soccer saying Nations League 1 and a pretty far second Gold Cup.
All right. We already talked about who's included in this roster, who's not due to injuries. But let me ask you about snubs, specifically in the center back position. Who's the biggest snub? Mark McKenzie or John Brooks?
Well, it depends what you're looking for. If you want to win now, it's John Brooks. If you're looking to build for the future, it's McKenzie. Here's the bottom line, though, is I'm shocked that not at least one of these two, Mal, got a call-up, considering what I just told you about the issues that the U.S. has at center back. It's not just the injuries, which are significant. Cameron Carter-Vickers started against Iran. Tim Ream was a full-time starter at the World Cup. But your other World Cup starter, Walker Zimmerman, is not having his best season right now. And Austin Trusty is a guy who's coming off a good season, but is a virtual unknown at the senior international level. So given all of that, all of those question marks in the center defense, I thought you would have gotten at least one of these two dudes who are in really good form into the camp. If you're asking me to pick one between the two, I will go with John Brooks based on experience. One, higher level two. He's doing it in the Bundesliga compared to the Belgian League, with all due respect to what Mark McKenzie's been able to accomplish. And the other thing here is he's a left-footed center back. We know that those guys don't grow on trees, and he gives you tactical versatility. He can obviously play as the left center back in a back four, but if you want to go with a back three, he could be your left kind of outside back, or he could be your center back, which is what we saw him play, the center back in a back three at Hoffenheim. And Pellegrino Matarazzo on this show told us how big a part of Hoffenheim staying up John Brooks and his leadership were in that role. So I would have thought one of those two gets in. I would have thought Brooks is probably has a slightly stronger case because he plays in the Bundesliga, but don't sleep on McKenzie. Because not only has he had a good season, his team's having a great season, and he's a center back right now, Mal, who is scoring goals. And this was his reaction on Instagram, putting up the Nick Young meme. He was pretty bitter, so I'm not the only one that thinks that he got snubbed. And by the way, who coached him at the Philadelphia Union? BJ Callahan. Yeah. I bet that was an awkward phone call.
Yeah, I agree with John Brooks. That's a head-scratcher, especially when you consider that you can have him for that Nations League two games, and then you can set him off for their summer break, considering that the U.S. men's national team will have a different roster for gold. Now, how crucial, right? How crucial is to not miss when you name center backs for this game specifically against Mexico? Mm-hmm.
Yep. We'll see. I mean, some big questions there for BJ Callahan. As far as John Brooks is concerned, he was on the list of 60, so maybe still a shout and a hope there for the Gold Cup. All right, somebody who was never worried about making a final list is our main man, Clint Dempsey. Now, surely you've been following throughout this past week the TST 7v7 soccer tournament. It's a soccer tournament where the winner gets a $1 million prize. Well, Clint Dempsey is involved as a coach, and Herc and I had a chance to speak with him, not just about TST 7v7, but a lot of things about American soccer. Here's part one of our two-part interview with Clint Dempsey. Our next guest on Football America is none other than Clint Dempsey. What a treat, the U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer, the U.S. men's national team legend. And as of this weekend, a participant in the 7v7 tournament, the soccer tournament, with a cash prize of $1 million to the winner. Clint, great to have you on the show.
Good to be here. I wish I could have got Herc to be on my team.
Man. That was my first question. What happened to the invite? You didn't
know. No,
you
I got an invite. I got
works
an invite.
Too much. He works too much. You don't have time for anybody else.
So Team Dempsey reached out and I politely declined. I had some medical issues we won't get into, but I politely declined. But all I thought to myself was like, Clint really needs another $1 million? Come on.
Come on, bro. We got six kids. I got to pay for college.
That's right.
Clint, surely you're not doing it for the money, though. So I think that's kind of my question is, you know, you retire from the game. I don't know how active you are. I don't know if you still play a ton of pickup. But when this first comes across your desk, like, what was your reaction? Were you eager to play or did you have to be talked into it?
Well, I'm more of a coach. I'm not really going to be playing in the tournament. It was more Leko came to me about the idea of doing a 7v7 tournament. And then him and some of his friends, they're the ones that connected to Jonathan Mugar, who was with TBT, and how we could do this for soccer, called it TST, the soccer tournament. And I thought it was a cool concept. It was more about, like Herc knows, you know, on days that you kind of take it easy, 7v7 were like the fun day, especially for strikers, because you get a lot of opportunities in front of goal. I like some of the changes with kick-ins instead of throw-ins. It just makes play quicker, keeping the ball on the ground, and then no slide tackling, promoting attacking play. So, I thought it was a cool concept. I kind of talked with them about some of the rules and, you know, changes that I would make. And they asked me if I wanted to have a team, and I said, yeah, that'd be great. Try to maybe get that mix of former pros with like some new talent. We did some tryouts and we got, you know, five guys from the tryouts that we're going to need to rely on their athleticism and their fitness, because we've had some other guys, former pros, pick up some injuries. So we're definitely going to have to use our depth in this tournament.
What kind of coach is Clint Dempsey?
I'm about having fun, man. Let's go out. I mean, serious about having fun. You know me, I'm a competitive person. I want to win. Herc will tell you that. Depending on if we win or lose, I'm in a completely different mood. So a little bit bipolar, you would think. But no, I mean, it's just about having fun, going out there, giving your best, as long as you're honest about whether or not you're tired or not, coming off the pitch, giving other people the opportunity, and just do a good job of communication with your teammates about when players switch, how you stay man for man, or how you switch off of those players. And when you win the ball, you know, just being able to play quickly forward to expose the space that you have from turnovers. So I'm just someone who wants to have fun, want to win. And hopefully I'm a cool coach. We'll see. So you have to ask other people.
Hey, Clint, let me ask you really quickly, because I got to see a little bit of the game, and I guess the only comparable thing I have is the Kings League out in Europe, you know, Gerard Piqué's kind of league, and some of those rules. I saw the end where they have the target goal, and then it was first goal wins, and they were taking a player out. It's 77, but they take a player out, and they keep going.
Yeah,
eventually this could be like 1v1 to decide a game, right? Are there any other rules that kind of stand out to you?
I mean, the thing is, the only thing that I would change, if you're already winning the game in the group stage, I don't think that you would need to do the target score, because you want to save legs for the knockout rounds. Right. And then in the knockout rounds, you would always have extra time and penalties in like World Cups and major tournaments. But do the target scoring more so in the knockout rounds to maybe save people's legs, because you're starting to see some of the older players starting to pick up injuries. So it's about how long can you keep your team healthy? But I think it's a cool concept, winning, you have to win with a goal. I wish they would bring golden goal back to international soccer. But yeah, I like the kick-ins. I like the fact that if you're a keeper, they don't want you throwing it past halfway, so you have to build out a little bit more. But yeah, you know, I think in the first year, you'll kind of figure out what works, what doesn't. I think it's great that you have the subs on the fly, because we definitely need it, because everybody was getting tired. It's almost like you're subbing every 2 minutes. So it's been interesting, to say the least.
I don't know about you, Herc. This guy doesn't sound like a coach. He sounds like a commissioner. It sounds like you're going to take over the league, man.
No, I don't doubt it.
Let's go.
Keep going.
Clint, so obviously you've been busy. You've been busy in the time since you stepped away from your career. You've been doing a lot of TV work. I don't think anybody's surprised that you're good at TV. I think people are surprised that you decided to do TV. What drew you kind of into the limelight? Because as a player, at least the stereotype, the perception of you was a guy that wasn't really into that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially towards the end of my career, I started being more, I guess, like a hermit in terms of the pressure that you have being a DP and all the criticism that comes with being in that position, and then, you know, trying to be successful. And if the team does well, then you're part of that success. If the team doesn't do bad, then a lot of the failure falls on your shoulders, and a lot of negative media kind of comes your way. And it's tough to kind of deal with all those type of things. And, you know, it was kind of hectic being in that position where you're always talking and being in that limelight. You just kind of wanted to be with your family. And then when you get that time away from the game and you're able to see it from this perspective, you can kind of understand it a little more of how to navigate that role as a player. But for me, what got me to be on TV was being able to be in situations where you can be yourself. I don't want to feel like I'm trying to be something that I'm not. If I don't want to talk about a certain issue, then I won't talk about it. If I'm passionate about something, by being in a situation where you can talk about what you're passionate, that's what makes me want to be a part of that project. So with CBS giving me the opportunity to do that with Marisa Duke, Kate Abdo, Charlie Davies, and Gucci Mieux, that's what kind of got my feet wet. And then from there, I got the chance to work with Fox in the World Cup. But you know, I don't do it every day. I only could do like international. I don't see how y'all guys do the week to week. You know, y'all are the people that are, y'all are the serious grinders. So hats off to y'all, you know, a lot of respect for that, but I'm more of kind of part-time type of person.
Commissioner and agent, Clint Dempsey.
There we go.
That's right.
There we go.
That's Kurt, right.
Let me do the next deal, bro. Gotcha.
Bro, I don't have an agent right now. So if you want, we can talk.
All right, 10%. I'll cut you a deal, 10%.
Hey, you know, take this in the best way possible. I'm very surprised you moved into TV, and I'm even more surprised you're as good as you are, because you're really good at this. So I guess what I want to ask you is, you've experienced media in a different way from most ever will. You've been the face of a club in Europe, in the Premier League. You've had big transfers. You've kind of seen that culture. How would you compare the media landscape there to the U.S. media landscape?
Ooh. That's a good question. I would say definitely both are cutthroat, but in Europe you're more, you know, in the spotlight, because it's the main sport there.
Right.
When you're in a country where it's the main sport, well then it's just every day, it's right there in your face, whether you're watching, you know, on Sky, or they have the newspapers that are in the locker room. I mean, I was never on the biggest teams per se when I was in Europe. The biggest team, I would say, in terms of getting for that Champions League spot was Tottenham. But with Fulham, you kind of went under the radar a little bit. But still, I mean, you're in one of the biggest leagues in the world. And like you said, there's more pressure there. There's more eyes on you. And it's more difficult of a league. You can't hide. And you want to do well, when you get your chances, you got to take them and you got to stay in there, because if a team wins when you're not in there, it's not going to be likely that you're going to get in that next game and be a starter. You're going to have to come on as a sub. So it's definitely more difficult, I think, being in Europe and having that pressure of the media. But in the States, I mean, it's still there in terms of the criticism that you're under. It's just, I don't think it's at that level yet in the States of having that pressure that you do in Europe or in Mexico or in South America.
Clint, you've had the perspective as well of being an American in the Premier League. Like, we just saw it with Leeds getting relegated, the three Americans there really getting hammered, not just by the press, but by the fans as well. How are Americans treated in the Premier League? What was your experience like? Is there a different lens that you're seen through?
I think there's always, you feel a certain way, right? Being an outsider. And for me, I felt that I couldn't be just as good as a European player, especially a British player. I think that I had to be better than them to get the nod. You know what I'm saying? I just felt like you had to do that little bit extra to kind of get on the field, because I don't think when they looked at American players through that lens of being top level footballers, that we got that respect. There's always that chip on your shoulder, having to prove yourself. And for me, I was always one that was going to take care of my family. I was going to make those coaches play me, especially my time in Fulham. Every year there was a new coach there. And it was about figuring out ways that I could get on that field and try to put myself in a good spot that I could be successful, and being in an attacking position that was getting goals and assists. So Herc knows how I was, man. I mean, long as I had that fire in me, and I was going to give it everything that I could to make them play me. And that was my mindset, and that's what I did.
Thanks, man. All right, great stuff there from Clint Dempsey. Lots to unpack, but of course, Mauricio, what steals the headline there is how Americans are treated abroad. What do you think of what Clint Dempsey said about how the USMNT guys get it over in the Premier League?
Well, very, very interesting. I understand when he says that every time he played at Fulham, he had a chip on his shoulder. I get it. And I even believe the time that he played in, the criticism was not as intense as it is right now, especially when what we saw with Leeds United. And yeah, it seems like it's a joke, but it's no joke, the Ted Lasso effect. It is real. Mm. It is 100% real. And it's not smart to blame Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, even Jesse Marsh for Leeds relegation. But sometimes you're looking for scapegoats, right? And yep, I believe they became easy targets for the media, for the fans, to point at someone to blame for the way the team played during this season and the end result, which was relegation. But one thing he said that should stick with every single, not only American player, U.S. player, but also Mexican players. We saw it with Raul Jimenez, for example, is, yes, you're going to have to prove yourself, but you need to have that drive. That drive is going to probably set you apart from your competition. And if someone had different type of drive, that was Clint Dempsey. I thought that was very, very smart what he said.
Yeah. You know what's changed since Clint Dempsey was around is the expectation on the American players. Clint Dempsey was getting big moves, but not as big as Christian Pulisic. And those big ticket moves, and when you go to a club like Leeds, it's going to fight for its place in the Premier League, a historic club like that, and you got three Americans. Not only is, you know, the pressure more, there's more eyeballs. There's more American eyeballs who are chirping as well. And I think sometimes the British press likes to engage in that for sure. All right, enough on the U.S. men's national team. What about their opponent June 15th in Las Vegas? El Tri. We're doing things a little bit differently. Diego Coca releasing a 33-player list from which he'll make both the Nations League and Gold Cup teams this summer. This group will also play friendlies against Guatemala and Cameroon on June 7th and the 10th. 23 of the 33 that were selected play in Liga MX. We got 4 goalies, 12 defenders, 9 midfielders, and 8 forwards, though how everybody was labeled is a little bit interesting. No Chucky Lozano, of course, he's hurt. No Eric Gutierrez. He's been left out to sort out his future, currently on the outs at PSV. And no Tecatito as well, working on his club future. There are already multiple reports out of Mexico, including ESPN, that it's already known who the 10 players cut will be. As again, you got to get down to 23. Big names among those to be cut, including Qatar World Cup vets Raul Jimenez, Nestor Araujo, Kevin Alvarez, and Piojo Alvarado. Mao, Mexico was criticized for being too old at the last World Cup. As we open up our first of three questions, did Diego Coca's first competitive team, real true competitive team, get young enough?
I think it did. It doesn't look like it, but I think it did got young enough. Probably not as young as we would have liked, but I think young enough. I was coming up with this starting 11 against the U.S. men's national team, and I'm going to leave Guillermo Ochoa out of this picture.
Yes, because he hurts the math.
Exactly. The average for the starters, for the 10 field starters, is 25 years old, which is actually great. And I'm obviously considering Santiago Jimenez to be a starter over Henry Martin. That plays a big factor as well. Mm-hmm. As I think for now, I think that should be the case. Yeah. But I do believe, yes, that he got young enough to a point, Sebi, in which we feel it is a fresh start. It's not the same that we used to have for the past two or three World Cup cycles. Mm-hmm. No more Andres Guardado, no more Hector Herrera. The center back position is going to be brand new with Cesar Montes, Johan Vázquez, most likely. I believe all in all, no Chucky Lozano, no Tecatito Corona. Most likely we're going to see Alexis Vega, Orbelín Pineda playing those wide, wide roles. I think the team looks a little younger. It is fresh, and I'm optimistic. I'm very, very optimistic with the fact that Diego Coca made the tough call, the tough decisions to leave out of this roster the players that have been there for a long time and honestly not delivering.
It's getting younger. It's not getting overwhelmingly younger. Yeah. It's relative, right? You saw some of the guys on that graphic. Cesar Montes, Sebastian Cordova. They're 25. They're halfway to 30. So those are not true, like, young bloods. But if you really put together an 11, I want to see your 11, Mal, because that's really what this boils down to. You take 33 players, I can tell you it's not young. If you put some of these young guys, if you put a Santiago Jimenez up top, if you put an Eric Sanchez, who's 23, in a midfield, if you find some time, he's probably not a starter, but Ociel Herrera, who's been playing very, very well. We saw a lot of him in Liguilla. And Julián Araujo brings you down right there at 21 as a right back. If you put those guys in the starting 11 against the United States, that's a lot of inexperience. But at the same time, that's how you get younger. Is it enough to make up for the old age that we saw at the World Cup? I don't know. It's a good first step. The reality, Mal, though, and I think this is the bigger problem, is there's not that many young players who have lit it up in Liga MX to choose from. So the guys you're choosing from are not 20 and 21. They're 23, 24, and 25.
And the fact that there's a lost generation that's not going to be a part of an under-20 World Cup or Olympic Games, that's also a big factor.
Absolutely. All right, let's move to our second question here on three questions, and it has to do with the guys that were left off. Who is your biggest snub, Mao?
First of all, production. I know how you're playing. Victor Guzman, we don't even have a picture with Victor El Pocho Guzman with the national team kid. We do not have it. Yep. And that makes me extremely, extremely sad. But my biggest snub, and this should come as no surprise for anybody, is Diego Lainez. Here's why. Diego Lainez is a very, very talented player, ladies and gentlemen. There's no questioning that. He's an extremely talented player. All he needed is just a different atmosphere, different stage. He found it at Tigres. And even if he wasn't the most important player in this championship run, he became a crucial part for the team to start playing better, be more aggressive, and I feel that he earned that spot in the national team. Mm-hmm. You don't have players that can play both sides, left-hand side, right-hand side, that can also start through the middle, that it has the ability to win on 1v1 situations, who has a good eye to assist. He doesn't have that much goal. We know that already. But I believe this was a very good opportunity for Diego Lainez to prove that he belongs in the national team. I was very disappointed to see that he's not going to make Gold Cup or Nations League roster.
I'm disappointed, but earned is kind of strong. If you're going to say a guy has to earn his spot in the national team, you can't really look at Diego Lainez and what he's done at Tigres and say he's played his way onto the best 23 players. Can you? You can do it off talent. You can do it off potential. You can do it off potential roles that he might play. But you can't honestly tell me that what you've seen at Tigres, he's earned it.
Don't you agree that every time he played with a national team, sometimes he was the best player on the field?
Hey, I love Diego Lainez, and I want to see him included. But biggest snub means you've earned the right and you weren't given it. And that's why I'm not going with Lainez. Do I want to see him on the team? Yes. But he hasn't earned it like our guy, Victor Guzman, who it must be even more cruel for Victor Guzman to see Victor Guzman on the list and then it's not him. I don't know what more this guy can do. And I don't know what Diego Coca's telling us by not putting on the player who single-handedly, what we heard time and time again on this show, drug Chivas to the Liga MX final. All we heard from Herc was Alexis Vega not there. They've done it without Alexis. Pocho Guzman is the man. And you know what? The numbers backed it up. The performances backed it up. He's been doing it not just this season, but he's been consistent. I don't know what more this guy has to do to get into the national team. And by the way, he didn't just get left off the list of 23. Yeah. He got left off the list of 33. You want to talk about disrespect? That's why I got him down as my biggest snub. It's not a surprise, but it's disrespect for sure, Matt.
Claro Sports reported in Mexico that Victor Guzman already spoke to Diego Coca. Mm. And Victor Guzman said that Diego Coca explained to him that it's only sporting reasons why he's not being called up, which makes absolute no sense.
Right.
I think it's time for Diego Coca and for the Mexican National Soccer Federation to come out and just say it. Say it. You don't have to go into specifics, but just say it. Victor Guzman will not be a part of the Mexican national team for disciplinary reasons. We're not going to go into that, but just so you know, he's a great player. He's doing because if you don't call him up just for strictly sporting reasons, then you're not doing your job, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It looks like Diego Coca in that case is not watching Liga MX, or at the very least not watching Chivas. Two more players that I wanted to name of the group from 33 that got cut down. Kevin Alvarez and Piojo Alvarado. Those were both surprises to me. Which one is more a surprise to you?
I'm going to say Alvarado. I think Alvarado had a fantastic Liguilla. You said Guzman was the biggest player for Chivas all season long. I believe just if we only consider Liguilla, El Piojo Alvarado was fantastic. This is the highest level that I have seen him play. Kevin Alvarez, the $11 million man, not being a part of this roster is also surprising, but he's a right back. Is he better than Jorge Sanchez, who plays at Ajax? Is he better than Julian Araujo, who doesn't play but trains with the first team at Barcelona? I can see that happening, but Piojo Alvarado, that was a surprise.
All right, let's get the final question here on three questions. And now, Mal, that we've seen both rosters ahead of the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal between the United States and Mexico, is Mexico the favorite in Las Vegas?
Unlike another host of this show, I am not gonna sacar el paraguas.
Okay.
And I'm gonna be
no
straightforward
umbrella
with my answer and say yes. Mexico is the favorite against the U.S. men's national team in Las Vegas. And I'm not even taking in consideration the managerial situation, right? Because that's one of the biggest differences between two teams. But I think Mexico needs it more. I feel like Mexico wants it more. They are going to play it like it is a final. A lot of the players are going to perform in that game like their future with the national team depends on that game. And I'll tell you this. I'm not saying that Diego Coca's future depends on just only the result of this match, but I think it matters. I think it's going to be important. And whatever happens for the U.S. men's national team, it's really not that big. It's really not that important. So just for that factor, just because Mexico needs it more, wants it more, I think they are slight favorites over the U.S. men's national team.
Shaka Hislop always says, if you give players an excuse, they're going to take it. And all the U.S. players that right now, they have an excuse. They've got the interim coaching them. So that is a point of advantage for Mexico, a significant point of advantage. In fact, if you go line by line, Mao, I probably only give the edge to the United States in the front three.
Yeah,
right? In the front three, I think the U.S. has the edge.
Yeah.
In midfield, it's close, but a U.S. midfield without Tyler Adams, we know does not function nearly as well. So I give the midfield edge to Mexico. In defense, we just went through it talking about the center backs for the U.S. There's a lot of question marks and absences there. And even though Herc doesn't think that Cesar Montes and Johan Vasquez had a particularly good season because their teams got relegated, I think both those guys proved they could play in top five leagues in Europe, that they have a role at that high elite level. So I think Mexico's more solid there. Probably goalie, it's a wash. No, Turner does some things better than Memo. Memo probably does some things better than Turner. If there is an edge, it's Memo. It's not much. I think the edges are narrow, but they add up in favor of Mexico as you go line by line, Matt. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Listen, again, it's not the fact that they just needed more. I'll give the U.S. a slight edge. You know where? Roster depth. I think the U.S. roster is a little deeper than the Mexican national team roster. But just for one game, yeah, I think Mexico is a favorite.
And what is history worth also? We probably should ask that, because the history of late is a lot of success for the U.S. against Mexico.
Absolutely.
And somewhere that'll be a factor as well. Speaking of the Mexican national team, the man who took it to the World Cup in 2002 and 2010, Javier Aguirre, has a new contract. He had been linked to Club America. Instead, he signed a contract extension at Mallorca through the summer of 2024. El Vasco took over March of last year. The club was in the relegation zone, 9 games left. He saved them this season. Mallorca at some point was even flirting with Europe. They're 12th right now. They could finish as high as 9th, depending on what happens in the last game of the season. But Mallorca safe and Javier Aguirre with a contract through the summer of 2024. La Liga season concludes this weekend. An intense relegation battle is where the drama is. Down at the bottom of the table, Kyle Larin, the Canadian international, and Valladolid need to win to stay up and get some help. Luca de la Torre and Celta Vigo, Yunus Musa and Valencia also still fighting for their status in the Spanish top flight. Let's talk Lionel Messi, because now it is officially official. We've known for some time, but now confirmation from PSG manager Christophe Galtier. Lionel Messi will not be returning to the Paris club next season. Galtier making the announcement in the presser ahead of PSG's season finale. Messi joining the Paris club in 2021 after 20 plus years at Barcelona. He's been, of course, linked with a move back to Barcelona, a big money move to Saudi Arabia, and, of course, a potential future in Major League Soccer with Inter Miami. Speaking of, Inter Miami are now searching for a new manager. Coincidence? Coincidence? We'll discuss. Phil Neville out with Inter Miami, 15th in the Eastern Conference, dead last in the table. Phil Neville has been relieved of his duties by Inter Miami, who have been rumored to be considering Tata Martino for the job. Of course, we know all of the links between Tata Martino and Lionel Messi. Mauricio Pedrosa, is this something, nothing, or everything in Inter Miami's continued pursuit of Lionel Messi?
It is something. It is something. I don't think it's everything. I think there are many other factors that will decide either Messi comes or not comes to Major League Soccer. I don't think the fact that Gerardo Martino is a candidate, or even if he becomes the new Inter Miami head coach, will actually tip the scales in favor of Messi deciding to come and play in Major League Soccer. But we all know that Messi, Gerardo Martino, was a manager under Barcelona. They had a good relationship. The relationship between Martino and the rest of the team was not great. Then he was his manager with the Argentinian national team. They lost those Copa America finals. That's when Messi first announced that he was retiring from the national team. Martino was fired. So, is it going to make Messi's decision a little easier if he has a familiar face who's going to be his new manager? 100%. Is that the only factor? I don't think so. That's why I only think it is something, not everything.
I think it's everything. Look, I said a few weeks ago on this show, when Don Garber uses the words, get it over the line, there's a little bit more than smoke there, okay? Well, I think we are very, very close to finding something out about Lionel Messi.
Me too.
And
me
Inter
too.
Miami. Yeah. And honestly, man, it cannot come soon enough. Not just for Inter Miami, but for Major League Soccer. Lionel Messi to this league, we've said it a million times, would just be massive. And you almost have to do anything that you can, Mal, to make it happen. Aside from Tata Martino, what's very interesting, what we're hearing, is a potential partnership between Inter Miami and Barcelona, so that Messi could play maybe a year and a half at Barcelona and then come to Inter Miami. I got to tell you, I hate that. No. Inter Miami doesn't need Barcelona to make this happen. They got to do it on their own. I want Messi now, not in 2025.
I don't see how that makes sense for Inter Miami. Honestly.
Exactly.
Not one bit. If Messi wants to go and play for Barcelona, mm-hmm. he can do it without Inter mm-hmm. Miami. Right? Mm-hmm. He can absolutely do it. He's still waiting to hear from La Liga and finding out if Barcelona's numbers are going to be good enough in order for them to sign Messi. Mm-hmm. As of now, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. And remember, Cristiano Ronaldo just announced that he's going to stay put in the Saudi League. I don't know if that is also one of the reasons why Messi doesn't want to go there, just to compete again against Cristiano Ronaldo. So I'm with you here. I think we're inching closer, and maybe closer than ever, to hearing from Lionel Messi's camp that the decision is that he will play for Major League Soccer. And I know this for a fact. Major League Soccer and Inter Miami have done everything is in their power to bring Messi to Major League Soccer. But they are close. I think they are very, very close.
Xavi Hernandez has mentioned that he expects a decision sometime in the next week. And everybody's worried about how's Inter Miami going to do it with money. Remember, there was a time in this league where nobody was paid more than $5 million. Then suddenly Lorenzo Insigne is on $14 million. They'll figure it out with Lionel Messi. What about Phil Neville? Now, was this the wrong time to fire Neville by David Beckham? Or is it the perfect timing with Lionel Messi potentially coming this summer?
Well, those are two different questions. Because the right time in terms of what the team needed, I mean, there were like three or four other instances in which it would have been the right decision to fire Phil Neville. Right now, it felt like it was time, right? The team was going nowhere. There was a moment at the beginning of the season in which it looked like the team was clicking, right? They were getting the results. They were getting the results, but they were not playing great. And I think that was one of the factors why it was very clear to everyone that the Phil Neville experience was nearing the end. And yeah, I mean, timing is everything in life. And when the moment arises in which you can sign Lionel Messi, you don't want someone like Phil Neville with his track record to be his new manager. So yeah, it feels like it was the proper time to do it.
Yeah, the reason we're connecting the Phil Neville departure with Lionel Messi is because there were other times, as you say, Mao, where things were worse at Inter Miami. They had a six-game losing streak at one point this season. In fact, I was watching a game in the Open Cup, and I know I've talked about it on this show before, where if they don't get a goal in the last minute of play, they go out to Miami FC of the second division, and I think Phil Neville might have lost his job that night. So there's been pressure building and building and building. And we've seen it bubble over in the press conferences. We saw the exchange with Neville and Franco Panizo a couple weeks ago. And then actually in just his latest press conference, he's basically begging the fans not to go after his kids. And I don't just mean his young players, actually his son who he put in the game and got booed. When the fans are turning and booing on your kid, it's become personal. It's become toxic. And so I can actually look at this and say, you know what? Messi's convenient, and maybe this is part of Messi, but also things at Inter Miami are so foul or so toxic right now. When the coach has to go and in the post-game press conference defend his son, you got big, deep issues there, and I think it's very fair for Inter Miami now to walk away from Phil Neville now.
Absolutely, and just let's not forget this. If Phil Neville wasn't one of David Beckham's closest friends, he would have probably lost his job way, way, way sooner than now.
There you go. Let's take a look at Inter Miami under Phil Neville in the last three seasons of MLS. Now, I'm not a statistician. I'm not a real math guy. It's not very good.
Well, I can tell you it's not great. That's not great.
Our next guest here on Football Americas is playing in the German Cup Final this weekend on ESPN Plus, RB Leipzig against Eintracht Frankfurt. Paxton Aaronson, great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, nice to be back. Good to see you.
So tell us a little bit about final week. Obviously, this is a massive game, huge game for the club. What's it been like around training?
The energy's been great. And like you said, massive game for the club, massive stakes. And everything that I've heard from the DFB Cup final is just, they call it over here, the Super Bowl of Germany. So the atmosphere is crazy, you know, 75,000 fans, energy's high, super intense, but we've been handling it great in training, and I know we're super excited to just get after it.
You played in some big games over here in your time with the Philadelphia Union. Did it prepare you at all? Are there any similarities in terms of build up to a big game in MLS versus what you're experiencing this week?
I think for sure, finals, no matter what you play in, all kind of have that same feeling, you know? Going into it, you know you have to give 100%, and at the end of the day, it's just going to be a fight. And yeah, you leave it all out on the field and hope to be victorious at the end of it. Like you said, I got that experience in Philly in the MLS Cup final, that thriller. And I think all finals share similarities. Of course, there's differences in the opponents you play, but yeah, it definitely prepared me.
You buy into that? Like, we talk about it on the show a lot, that like all finals kind of have a certain feel to them. They tend to be, even if you have two like really attacking, aggressive teams, kind of cagey affairs. Is that what you've experienced and what you expect this weekend?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's like you said, there are the similarities, the first 15 minutes of every final, you know, it's kind of like the nerve setting in. You take the first 15 minutes to kind of settle everything down, feel out the opponent, and then from there on you take it. But always in the first 15, 20 minutes, it's always chaotic, you know? It's just you're giving all the energy that you've built up the entire week.
Eintracht Frankfurt's a historic club. Have you gotten any sense, I don't know, maybe from the guys in the dressing room or maybe even from the people in the street, kind of what a championship like this would mean to the club?
Yeah, I've gotten the feel about it just talking to some guys. You know, we've had two guys on the team now that won the cup in 2018 with Eintracht, Timothy Chandler, fellow American, and Makoto Hasebe, Japanese center back. And I've kind of talked to them and just what it means to the club. And bouncing back to last year when we won the Europa League final, seeing the scenes of that, seeing the city on camera and just talking to the guys and the experience and the feeling about all of that. And the fans still show that passion to this day. So I know how much it would mean to the city and to the club.
We got a guy on ESPN FC, Jan Agafjortov, who of course played at Eintracht Frankfurt. He always talks about the fan base there and the club. What is that fan base like? What do they bring to your games?
Oh, they're truly incredible. Every home game is magnificent, and every away game, they make it feel like home, really. The support since I've been here is the number one thing that I've noticed. How into detail the fans are and how diehard they are, you know what I mean? It was this past game when we played against Freiburg, we were losing 1-0 and I don't know what minute, but you just heard the fans edging us on the entire game. They always believed in us, you know, and they gave us that extra kick. And at the end, we made the 2-1 and we ended up getting Europe, but they were a huge part of it.
Let's look back at the season as a whole, both, I think, individually and collectively. We'll start with the collective since we're talking about the team. As you assess the Bundesliga campaign, how do you feel about it now looking back on it?
I think it's been a successful campaign, you know. I've only joined since January, so I've came for 5 months, but we've had our ups and downs, you know, a couple of results didn't go the way we wanted, where we thought we should have gotten more, a couple of draws here and there. At the end of the day, we fought hard and ended up, our number one goal was to obviously achieve Europe this year, and we ended up getting that, and we're in a final. So, you know, you can't complain too much.
What about you? I mean, you do the thing that I think, you know, on paper seems to be the hardest, you know, to make the jump to Europe and to do it mid-season. You know, how do you feel about your first 5-6 months over there?
I think it's gone tremendously well for me. Of course, there's always things I think I can improve, but from where I was coming here as a 19-year-old kid with no experience in Europe and to where I am now, the player and the person that I've kind of adapted to over these 5 months, I've been really happy with myself, and I've been really happy with the club and how they've approached me and how they've handled me and just kind of let me excel and kind of take my own path at my own pace. So I think it's been a really good 5 months for me.
You use the word adapted. How have you changed in those 5 months?
On and off the field, you know, living alone, just kind of being more independent, as simple things as learning how to cook and stuff like that. And then on the field, just, I'd say, when you come over here, you know, there's so many more veterans of the game. Of course, you have the veterans in MLS, but here there's guys that have been playing at this level for, you know, Makoto Hasebe's been playing at this level for 20 plus years, you know, so these guys bring stuff different. And for me, it was my main goal to just take things from these guys and learn adapt and see what I can take from them. And yeah, that's important for me.
I don't know if you ever watched, you know, other ESPN shows, but they'll always say, what was your welcome to the NFL moment, your welcome to the NBA moment, whatever that was. Was there a welcome to the Bundesliga, welcome to European football moment for Paxton Aaronson? Good or bad?
Yeah, I'd say it was just a moment on the field. I remember we were in Dubai, my first preseason game, my first game for the club. We were playing against Leipzig, matter of fact. And I started that game, and I got a ball played to me. There was a guy on my back, and I just waited for the ball, you know? I thought I had time, and I just got killed, you know, from behind. Just a guy came right through my back and just hit me. And Gibrosso, our number 8, was like, you don't have that time here in Bundesliga. You'll learn. I had to learn, too, but trust me, you don't have the time. You have to come to the ball. And, yeah, that was kind of the moment I realized.
Nice. Nice. And now you get rid of the ball a lot quicker?
Yeah. Now I'm checking to the ball. I'm never standing still.
All right, so I got to ask you about the under-20 team, because obviously you're with Eintracht Frankfurt. Great season, you know, German Cup final. I'm sure you're watching the boys. What have you thought about how they've been playing? They're now through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, those are my guys. I've been watching every game. I talk to them before every game. They've been really playing spectacular. You know, they've been a joy to watch. Just like yesterday, their relentlessness in scoring, but both defending. In the 95th minute yesterday, New Zealand gets a breakaway and Justin Che comes and makes a beautiful tackle to keep the clean sheet. So they have a great mentality, a great group of guys with a great coaching staff. So I know the group and I know they can go really, really far in the tournament.
You missing it a little bit?
Yeah, of course. But I think when the opportunity presents itself here, this is my club and I've loved the club ever since I came here, and to be a part of the German Cup final is an opportunity like no other. And yeah, so I'm really excited to be here and be in that as well.
And as big a role as you would have with the U20s, you have a growing role there at Eintracht Frankfurt. I feel like when you first got there, especially mid-season, at least what we talked about on this show was, you know, it's a project for the future. You know, we won't expect too many minutes. You have a role now. You come off the bench pretty regularly. How would you describe your role and specifically what the coaching staff is asking of you?
Yeah, like you said, it's kind of changed since I came here, like we spoke about whenever that was. The roles have kind of changed. And for me, it's just coming into the game and bringing energy. I think, you know, the crowd feeds on it, the players feed on it. When you come in as a sub and you bring these fresh legs and you bring this fresh energy, and the players on the field think, okay, we can get this guy the ball, he can make a difference. And the coaching staff communicate to me all the time on the field, whether it's just little things defensively, little things attackingly. The coach is always feeding me information, trying to give me that extra boost of confidence, and he's played a huge, huge role in my development. So I can't thank him enough for that, and the entire coaching staff.
There he is, Paxton Aaronson. Great to have you back on the show with us. Good luck this weekend in the German Cup final against RB Leipzig. You know all of the Football America's crew will be rooting for you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
German Cup final this weekend on ESPN+. Paxton Aaronson, there you see his season so far in the Bundesliga. It'll be his Eintracht Frankfurt against RB Leipzig. Leipzig, the defending cup champions last time. Frankfurt won 2018. Carlos Salcedo and Marco Fabian of Mexico were on that Eintracht team. A game between these two starts at 2 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Should be a thriller. Between Leipzig and Eintracht Frankfurt. Coverage actually starts at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, 10:30 a.m. Pacific time. Game available on ESPN Plus as well as ESPNU. Also on ESPN Plus this weekend, the FA Cup Final. And what a matchup. Manchester City, Manchester United. For those keeping track at home, 189th Manchester Derby, 142nd FA Cup Final. Manchester City chasing the treble, Premier League, FA Cup, Champions League. Last club to do it, of course, Man U back in 1999. This Manchester United chasing a domestic cup double of their own. They won the Carabao Cup earlier this season. Pep Guardiola and City, heavy, heavy favorites. Speaking of, time to book it. A cup final ESPN Plus Parlay edition of Book It, because we got both the FA Cup and German Cup
name
on ESPN Plus this weekend. Mao, what are you taking?
All right, I'm going to go with Leipzig and the over
at the FA Cup final. The 2.5 goals over for Man City, Man United. Leipzig, they recently beat Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. Great form, current cup champs. I like this team a lot. Eintracht Frankfurt plays a fantastic style of football, but in the end, I believe RB Leipzig are the more balanced team. And I have no idea who's gonna win tomorrow at Wembley Stadium. I do know that considering that it's just one game, that it's also very important for Man United, obviously for Man City, I believe we're gonna see goals. I believe we're gonna see goals, even though finals tend to play a little more nervousness, not that wide open. I don't think it's gonna be the case. Leipzig and the over, that's my parlay. What's yours?
Just want to clarify something here. Are these Mauricio Pedrosa's picks or are these Don Vegas's picks?
No, this is
because if it's
if this is Don Vegas, this is Don.
Okay,
Vegas.
Okay.
If it's Mauricio Pedrosa, we're going to win a very different result with the FA Cup pick.
Yes, the alter ego that never misses over on Deportes. Mal knows his stuff. Okay, so for my parlay, I'm going with the over 2.5 goals scored in the German Cup final. And then I'm taking two things from the FA Cup final.
Oh.
Man City to lift the cup. Doesn't matter if it's after penalties, extra time, or in the 90 minutes. And Erling Haaland as an anytime goal scorer. Now, I'm with you. Usually, Mal, finals are close. They're not really wide open. But this is not any final. This is a German Cup final. Of the last six Pokal finals, five have gone over 2.5 goals, and three, so half, have gone over 3.5 goals. So I'm betting on goals in the German Cup final. And then as far as Manchester City is concerned, I'm just not gonna bet against them to lose. I figure they're better than United over 90 minutes, and they're definitely better than United over 120 minutes. And Erling Haaland, man, just to give you an idea of how hard it is to make money betting on this guy to score, minus 190 on its own as an anytime goal scorer. He's right, so basically a lock to score, Mal. No wonder you're a Man City fan.
He hasn't scored as of yet. He didn't score against Real Madrid. Didn't score in the final two games of the league. I'm not saying that's going to be a trend. I'm maybe saying he's saving those goals for another stage. I don't know. But I like both our parlays.
We'll find out soon enough on ESPN Plus. Coverage starts 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Now, that's a 5:30 wake-up call for you out there on the West Coast.
Oh, I'm ready,
I know
baby.
You're a good company man. You're going to do it. Man City against Manchester United. Coverage on ESPN2 as well as ESPN Plus. All right, quick bit of NWSL news before we get out of here. Team number 14 has a name and a logo. That's right, the Northern California entry into the National Women's Soccer League will be called Bay FC. We've got a crest as well, and the club will begin play in 2024. Mao, impromptu edition of Drippin' or Trippin', what do you think?
Dripping 100%, love the crest. Love the logo. I don't know if I love the name. I don't want to be a hater. Maybe something a little more original, but the rest of it, the colors, the logo, the crest, everything looks amazing. Everything is beautiful. And welcome to the league.
Absolutely. Bay FC, kicking off in 2024 in the NWSL. That'll do it for this edition of Football America. Show us the cards. Wow. We made it. We have officially arrived.
Can we put it for sale as merch? Football America's merch? Who wants a
We could. We'll have a segment on the show on Monday shipping some merch. We'll also have part two of our interview with Clint Dempsey. Herc will be back. And good luck to the U.S. under-20s on Sunday.